Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist of Freedom Estate. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
To deliver this message.
Start.
Sure you know what I'm talking about. You see the world, it's full of confusion. People not knowing who to trust. No. And he's wondering why we still can't deal with this world he gave us.
My phone to the computer. Yeah. Okay.
Good to go. All right. This meeting is being recorded.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are back in the studio with us, the Gist of Freedom Radio Show. For another exciting episode, I am your host, Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Professor Jamal, a.k.a. Mr. Black 365, founder of Black365.com, where you can find a whole host of culturally relevant educational products. Here on this radio show, we discuss some of the most cutting-edge topics, some of the most up-to-date topics, and we interweave history and culture and societal issues and things that we're going through all into one. We understand that history is a continuous cycle. There's no beginning. There's no end of this thing that we call life, some believe. But again, we try to interweave and bring in all sort of aspects of things that are relevant to us and our freedom here at the Just Freedom Radio Show. And tonight's topic, we are continuing to build on a topic that we established in a previous episode, that being the topic of statues, that being the topic of honoring those who have come before us, the topic of how do we best represent ourselves by acknowledging our past and acknowledging those who have come before us. In a previous episode, we talked about Cleopatra's Needle, which is a misnomer and misnamed item. It is a tekin or an obelisk that came from Egypt. One of them now resides in New York's Central Park. You can go and listen and find out a whole bunch of details about that in a previous episode. But again, it started our discussion, it started our minds thinking about why do statues exist? Why do names on buildings exist? Are they just mere rock? Are they just mere plaster? Or do they have more of a significant meaning? What do they mean? One of the things is that building a statue gives people and understanding of the what people value, what others value, what a society values, and what message is trying to be brought forth. And so I'm just excited about this show. I can't hardly contain myself. People from the last show told me to slow down talking. A number of people told me that, so I'm trying to slow down, but my mind's moving so fast. Recently in the news, we all know that our brother John Lewis transitioned. And some have called for the renaming of the bridge there on Bloody Sunday to be named in his honor. The bridge I'm talking about is the Edmund P. Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. Some are saying that bridge should be called the John Lewis Bridge. We invite you to the conversation. What do you think? Should that be called the John Lewis Bridge? There are some amazing thoughts on the pro, and there's some amazing thoughts on the con. For one, our producer.
Somebody told me to deliver this message. I'm talking about the sea. The sea's a world that's full of confusion. People not knowing who to trust. No. And he's wondering why we still can't deal with this world he gave us. Another man that's been good. Well, he's wondering why that man hasn't even thought about helping that baby if they could.
Wait for no-
dead honest with you, I'm not sure that if I have the gumption, the fortitude, the intelligence, the stick-to-itiveness, the physical strength in my legs to make it 90 miles, 100 miles from enslavement to freedom, if I would have gone back. I'm not sure if I would have gone back. I mean, can I just be honest with you? Can I just be transparent one time? We're on the Just the Freedom Radio Show. We were Black365.com. We're family here. Let's just be honest. And you think about it. In your heart of hearts, in your mind, in your soul, do you think that you would have gone back? Yes, she went back initially to save her husband and family members. She went back to save others. But I'm not sure I would have went back. Tremendous sister, and we love her. Do you know that it wasn't just a leisurely stroll that she was on? She was running through wetlands, running through cold lands, running through treacherous terrain, hiding, traveling at night. Not only that, bloodhounds on her heels. Not only that, but she had a $40,000 bounty on her head in the United States and in Canada. She was America's Most Wanted before there was an official America's Most Wanted. Harriet Tubman, $40,000 bounty on her head. Let me tell you a little bit about the ingenuity of this system. Those posters I talked about her said that she couldn't read. And so we saw in the movie, and we saw in some other parts, and then throughout history, we know that sometimes she took the train. She didn't always run back and forth. Sometimes she took the train back to enslavement. And when she would travel by train, they say, in my research, she would carry a newspaper with her. Of course, you're looking for Harriet Tubman, looking for an illiterate person. You're not looking for someone with what? A newspaper. So anytime someone would be sort of eyeballing her on the train, is that her? Of course, they're trying to collect this $40,000. $40,000 then is a lot of money. $40,000 now is a lot of money. Some people on this line watching this video are turning their grandmother for $40,000 right now, let alone anyone who did not have the same thoughts of freedom that Harriet had for herself. Folks were looking to cash in on that $40,000. And so she would carry a newspaper with her. And when people would begin eyeballing her, she would lift up the newspaper as if she was reading. They said she dressed, you know, homely. She dressed as if she was enslaved at some times and carried with her chickens. My research indicates that she would tie a string around the legs of the chickens. And again, when someone would sort of be, is that the woman from the wanted poster? She would pull tightly on the string of the chicken so the chickens would go flustered and blustered and begin flapping in her face. Again, this is the mind, the ingenuity, the creativity, the enduring and everlasting spirit of a true, true warrior sister genius. She said she was from the Ashanti tribe of Ghana, and she would have these dreams. Some say she had narcolepsy. Others believe that she would pray and meditate and get guidance from God and the ancestors, and that's how she made her way through. Truly, truly a phenomenal sister and deserving of a statue. She was the first woman to lead a major military operation. Did you know that? Some people believe that only those who have served in the military are deserving of statues. Well, the first woman to ever lead a major military operation. I believe the day was June 2nd, 1963. Go ahead and double check me on that. I said 1863. June 2nd, 1863. I believe that Kimchi River raid, if I'm not mistaken, in South Carolina, Beaufort County, South Carolina. Nearly 700 individuals of African descent were freed on that day on a mission, on a raid led by this sister. I believe they tried to address that in the closing scene of the movie about Harriet when she was there and those Africans, enslaved Africans, began running out of the woods. It was that where she led a major military operation. She, they say, documented, helped 70 individuals of African descent escaped from enslavement to freedom. But I'm like, why do you count those numbers? Why not the 700? So nearly 1,000. And it's said that she once said that she would have freed thousands. She freed thousands. She would have freed thousands more if only that they knew they were slaves. Without a doubt, this sister right here is worthy of a statue. Some words. Again, I don't know about you, but when I dream, when I imagine, I dream deep. And so I imagine the four corners of the pedestal, the four sides of the pedestal that will hold up this monumental statue. Some of the words that could be placed on the side are valor, honor, wisdom, commitment. Some of the words that could be used to describe this phenomenal woman: valor, in the face of sure death, she stood tall. Honor, she honored the God inside of her, went back to honor her word to come back, and she did. Wisdom, to discern certain situations, to be tapped into the spirit, to come up with those ingenious ideas on how to evade detection. Commitment to the struggle. Harriet Tubman, fantastic sister, deserving of a statue. Again, you listen to the Just the Freedom Radio, so of course you're going to be hearing about people who are searching, seeking, attaining freedom. Again, I'm your host, Mr. Black 365, Jamal Brown. Next up, Malcolm X, Brother Omawale. This brother, in my humble opinion, deserves a statue. Why? Let's take a look. He accomplished many goals despite coming from a broken home. I put broken home in quotations because that term is oftentimes indicative of a family that has marital strife, and the parents perhaps got divorced or what have you. That was not the case in terms of Malcolm X. Broken in the fact that it was documented that Malcolm X said that four of his dad's brothers died as a result of white violence. Malcolm X's father himself, Mr. Earl Little, was a staunch Garveyite. He went around the country preaching, teaching, expanding the message of the Honorable Marcus Garvey and UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association. His mother was a staunch Garveyite. She was a regional secretary. She was the head of correspondence for all of the that side of the nation, several of the surrounding states where they lived. Her mother wrote the correspondence for his mother wrote the correspondence for the Universal Negro Improvement Association. Universal Negro Improvement Association was an organization started by Marcus Garvey, the largest black organization in modern history. His father, as I mentioned, was eventually murdered. We believe that he was murdered by the Black Legion, an offshoot of the KKK. His mother, seeing the murder of her husband, her beloved husband, a strong husband, having these children to raise, did what she could to keep herself together, keep the family together. Some life insurance, some insurance policies did not want to pay out the death because the paper and some other things ruled that it was a suicide. It's reported that his father was cut in half by a train, beaten, bludgeoned, placed on, tied to some railroad tracks and cut in half. They said the brother was so strong, some say ornery, so bold, so tenacious. Again, I'm talking about Mr. Earl Little. They said that he lived with his body severed in half for hours. Amazing brother. Strong brother. So when I say broken, this is sort of what I'm talking about when it comes to Malcolm. His mother began, because of the insurance policies not doing what they were supposed to do, she rented out part of her garden, doing what she can to keep her family together, keep her family on the right track. His mother eventually succumbed to mental health problems and was placed into a mental health institution in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Yet and still, Brother Malcolm maintained stellar grades in school. It wasn't until, we've seen it in the movie, he was in school and he was telling his fellow classmates and making an announcement to the class that he wanted to be a lawyer. He wanted to practice law. And in the language of the South, they say that his teacher put him down gently, meaning placed his hand on his head, I'm sure, patted him softly and said with a soft voice, "You know," I'm going to say it in the PC version, "black folks," "black folks such as yourself, young Malcolm, they're not lawyers. Why don't you do something with your hands? You're very skilled with your hands. Why don't you do something like carpentry? Why don't you do something, develop some sort of trade?" And this, along with the other things that was going on in his life, broke the will, broke the spirit. And so we know that Malcolm went astray, went from Malcolm Little to Detroit Red as he grew up and went into a life of crime. After he spent about 6.5 years in prison, he came out and helped to grow one of the largest black organizations that this country has ever seen. Of course, we're talking about the Nation of Islam. The Nation of Islam had a few hundred people and was fledgling at the time that Malcolm X became one of the ministers and began to grow that organization through his skill, through his wit, through his intelligence, through his innate leadership, leadership that he developed by seeing his parents do what they did. He went on, as I mentioned, to grow that organization, grew mosques all around this country, and created a newspaper that still is in existence today, a derivative of that newspaper still is in existence today. Do you know that Malcolm X was recognized on the world stage? What do you mean by that, Brother Jamal? When Malcolm X traveled internationally, other countries rolled out the red carpet as if he was the head of state. He routinely made connections with world leaders all throughout Africa. He debated some of the brightest minds that this country has and that other countries have as well. He would go to other countries and debate college students and college professors. Truly, truly a remarkable, remarkable man. What would be on the four sides of the monument dedicated to Malcolm X, in my opinion, the word fortitude comes to mind. Again, in the face of adversity, he stood strong. Self-determination, he determined for himself, by himself, who he would be. The brother made transformation after transformation after transformation. He went from Malcolm X, he went from Malcolm Little to Detroit Red to Malcolm X to Brother Omawale. He left eventually the Nation of Islam and created Muslim Mosque Incorporated, the Organization of African American Unity, OAAU, the Organization of African American Unity, again, determined for himself, by himself, the direction he wanted to go time and time again. After he became a minister, there were zero examples of him having interactions with the police in terms of negativity, meaning arrested or anything like that. Truly, truly a brilliant brother. He read the dictionary. Brother read the dictionary, had an exquisite, intellectual, articulate, disposition, and truly a fantastic brother. Again, you are listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show. This radio show has nearly 400 previous recordings, over 30,000 listens. Truly, truly a place that you want to tap into. Black History University is where you can find out more. I am your host, Mr. Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Professor Jamal, a.k.a. Mr. Black 365. Find out more about me and some amazing Black History products for all ages at black365.com. Next up, none other than the unconquerable Madam C.J. Walker. That's right. Madam C.J. Walker deserves a statue. Madam C.J. Walker deserves a statue without a doubt. Why? You know, she was a self-made millionaire. A self-made millionaire, meaning she had no inheritance, meaning she had no trust fund, meaning she didn't live off the interest of others. I always like to point out that there were other families who had millionaires, women who were millionaires at this time. For example, the Vanderbilt family comes to mind. You may have heard of Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. I'm told that there were millionaire women in the Vanderbilt family at this time. How did those women, or how did that family get their funds? They were in the fur industry. They weren't in the fur industry in the sense of setting traps and catching bear furs and other furs. No, they would hide in the bushes into someone else to catch an animal. They would hop out the bushes and steal the furs from other people's traps. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Madam C.J. Walker, who through her grit, through her grind, through her hustle, through her ingenuity, through her communing with the ancestors, developed products that made her a self-made millionaire. Not only that, but she taught entrepreneurship to hundreds, if not thousands, of other women. That's right. You know, there were thousands of Walker agents who went door to door selling Madam C.J. Walker's products. So she not only sought to become a millionaire for herself, but she created other millionaires and several hundred thousandaires as well. Truly, truly a phenomenal sister. And she was a race woman as well. This is something that's oftentimes overlooked, something that's oftentimes not talked about. What does that term mean, race woman, or a race man? It simply means a person who puts their race first. has a race-first consciousness, someone who believes that it's not only their right but their responsibility to make sure that people who look like them, people who come up in their similar communities, have a leg up, have an opportunity to advance, and this is what she did. Do you know that she used her mansion? Let me talk about her mansion for a second. She had a mansion in New York. Who did she choose as the architect to create that mansion? None other than the first black certified architect in the state of New York. That's right. The first brother licensed to create or develop real estate in the state of New York is who she chose to use to design her house. Had garages for several cars, which she owned. It had ponds. It had swimming pools. It had fountains. Truly, truly a phenomenal place. And she used her influence. She used her economic resources. She used her home, opened up her home to the Honorable Marcus Garvey so that he could host. Did you know that? A lot of people don't talk about it. You got to go deep. That's what we do here at the Gist of Freedom. That's what we do at Black 365. You go deep. So that Marcus Garvey, whenever he hosted international investors, international guests, he was able to use her home to host these people. So that these people would walk away with a sense like, man, this brother Marcus Garvey has something going on here. She was a race woman, proud woman, used her rights, used her resources to help expand the ongoing of other folks who look like her. Some words that would go on the sides of the monument dedicated to the Honorable Madam C.J. Walker, cooperative economics. Again, using her resources, combining with other resources, to create some synergy. Collaboration is key. In the film, I did a review. You can check out at black365.com. We'll put that up soon. I did a review talking about what the Netflix movie got right and what the Netflix movie got wrong. And one of the things it talked about was how she was selfish and stole and did all sorts of things. A lot of it was made up. But again, she used her energy, her influence, and her resources collectively, collaboratively, because she knew that collaboration was key to create synergy and create things happen, to create things for a lot of people. She was a spiritual woman. Again, a lot of those salves and serums and potions that she created to help restore the scalps of women were, she said, that came to her in dreams. It came to her after much prayer and meditation, so spiritual. Is a word that we can use when we think of Adam C.J. Walker. Brilliant. Obviously, she was a brilliant woman to go from nothing to something, to go from, as she said, from the washboards to having one of the most amazing brands and businesses, having one of the most amazing homes in the state of New York, and becoming a millionaire. And, of course, intelligence, to come up with the models for distributing her products door-to-door, direct-to-consumer. We think of today Avon. We think of today Mary Kay. We think of today all these other brands that are direct-to-consumer, and you have upline and downline and all that sort of stuff. I'm not talking about a pyramid. I'm talking about actual, tangible, cooperative economic things. Again, she laid the blueprint, laid the foundation for that. And for that, Madam C.J. Walker deserves a statue. Again, we've gone through Harriet Tubman, Malcolm X, Madam C.J. Walker, now the right, excellent, honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey deserves a statue in these United States. Now, when I was previewing this list with someone said, how are you going to give Marcus Garvey a statue in the United States? He wasn't even from the United States. Do you have this same opposition when I say the name Christopher Columbus? When I say I'm going to Columbus, Ohio? When I say if I'm going to Columbus, Georgia? Or did you not take off Columbus Day last time it was offered to you? Columbus, where was he born? Italy. Who did he work for? Spain. Never stepped foot, that's right. Never stepped foot on the shores of the United States. Yet and still, there are cities named after this guy. Guy is the best word I could think of to call him. I wanted to call him something else, criminal. There's, again, as I said, cities named after Christopher Columbus. There are universities named after Christopher Columbus. There is a holiday named after Christopher. There are statues for Christopher Columbus, who discovered absolutely nothing in these United States. So that does not disqualify Marcus Garvey from having, although being born in Jamaica, for having a monument dedicated to him in the United States. Why? What makes him worthy? As I sort of foreshadowed Mark Scarvey created the largest black organization in modern history. That's right. The Universal Negro Improvement Association, created by Marcus Garvey, had over 1 million paid members. Yeah. Nearly 7 million unofficial members or members by association, but 1 million paid members. I'm not talking about 1 million Facebook friends. I'm not talking about 1 million likes. I'm not talking about 1 million followers. I'm talking about 1 million paid members who paid into, who invested in the mission and purpose of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and followed Marcus Garvey. What were the tenets that he espoused of the Universal Negro Improvement Association were simple. He said, one God, one aim, one destiny. One God, one aim, one destiny. Essentially, he said, Marcus Garvey said, if you're black, then you're African. Doesn't matter if you're from Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, you're an African. Doesn't matter if you're from Trinidad, Tobago, Bahamas, Jamaica, you are an African. Despite where you were born on this great planet, you are an African if your skin is brown like mine. That's a real practical way of saying no matter your religion, no matter your politics, no matter your fraternal organizations or leanings, you are an African person first. All those things you chose second, he said. But the creator of all things chose you, blessed you with being black. You choose your religion. You choose if you're Alpha, Kappa, Q. You choose if you're Zeta, Delta, AKA. You choose those things. You choose if you're a Protestant or a Methodist or Episcopalian. You choose those things. But he said that the creator ordained that you were black and that everyone else who's black should come together, use their time, talent, and resources to make a more beautiful and abundant space and place on this planet for other black people. That is a beautiful message. It withstands the test of time. That is a resounding message that should ring clearly in all of our ears. He was influenced, no doubt, by the Honorable Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington, as we know, created the Tuskegee Institute and was one of our most practical leaders. Well, hopefully we'll be talking about him in a future episode. But he, Booker T. Washington, he in essence said things like, if you live in a house that's made of bricks, that you or someone else who looks like you should own the brickyard. If you wear shoes made of leather, you or someone else who looks like you should own the leather tanning business. Practical knowledge, practical information that we can still use to this day. It was a real simple. There's nothing complex about Marcus Garvey or his organization, or his political leanings, or the messaging of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, and that's why he deserves a statue. He had an international newspaper, the Negro World, went all throughout the planet. They shipped Negro World newspapers to Africa, to Europe, to South America. I'm told through my research that there would be children who would wait upon the shores of countries in Africa, waiting for the newspapers to arrive. And there was some children's role for their community because some of the elders did not want to learn English. And so some of the youngsters knew English and the traditional language in these African cities. So it was some children's role to go get the newspaper from the shore the moment it touched, read, memorize the entire paper, run back to their community and tell of the great things that Africans, that black people around the world were doing. Tell of the magnificent shipping line that Marcus Garvey had created. Tell of the stock and stock certificates. Tell of the cities that were being impacted. Tell of the Black Cross nurses that were established by the UNIA. You heard me right. I said Black Cross nurses. Created by the UNIA. He said that they were Red Cross nurses that treated white people. There should be Black Cross nurses who treat black people. And so for that reason, we respect, we honor, we love, we appreciate Marcus Mosiah. One more reason here before we take a pause. He was a champion of the Back to Africa movement. That's right. I was talking early 1900s. He was getting money. He gathered money, collected money, had stock certificates, sold stock, brought all these great people together, and with the purpose of understanding that people of our skin tone, African people, black people in this country, were not getting a fair shake, and so that we should return to our motherland, Africa. And so he had money, generated money to establish land in Africa. However, his movement was sabotaged by the United States government. Do you know that the first ever FBI agent of African descent was hired to infiltrate Marcus Garvey? Trivia question for you. What was his agency name? We have some gifts that we're willing to send out. We have some posters from the Gist of Freedom that for those first person to write in the name of that agent who was hired to infiltrate the UNIA and sabotage Marcus Garvey, we have a gift for you. Also, again, give us your top seven. Give us your seven lists of black people who deserve a statue, and we'll be giving out some gifts to some of our listeners. Again, he's a champion of the Back to Africa movement. We wear red, black, and green because of Marcus Garvey. Out of his movement came the red, black, and green flag. The red is for the blood of our ancestors, those who lived, struggled, and died to allow us to be who we are and what we are today. The black represents the black people here and now who understand that it's not only our right but our responsibility to champion the causes of those who went before us. And the green, Marcus Garvey said, was to remind us of our motherland, Africa, and to remind us, I have to share with you 1 second, Ms. Leslie, and the green was to remind us of the rewards of our struggle. The words that I would associate with him are visionary, practical leader, of course, and he was before his time. That voice that you heard was that of Ms. Leslie, our show's producer. We are going to patch her in now. Ms. Leslie, you have the ability. Let me see. I'm going to share. Are you ready to share your screen? Oh. We can hear you. Thank you. I'm making you the co-host. I believe that you can share your screen when ready. No. Let's see. Not yet. Still black. We're working out our technical difficulties here on the Gist of Freedom radio show. Radio show, as I mentioned earlier, that has over 300. Fastly approaching 400 shows, over 30,000 listens. Weekly, we will be having these type of conversations with you, having these type of discussions, bringing in thought-provoking, innovative conversations. Let's see. All right. We're gonna get it together. I promise. All right. Sharing my screen once again. You got a bit of a preview. Next person I feel in my heart of hearts is deserving of a statue is none other than Shirley Chisholm. That's right. Shirley Chisholm deserves a statue. Why? Did you know that Shirley Chisholm was the first, that's right, first African-American male or female to receive a major party vote for president through a major party nomination for president of the United States? Yes, 1970s, this sister was running for president, strong sister, devoted sister, race woman, intelligent woman, amazing sister, Shirley Chisholm. Do you know that she endured 11, that's right, not one, not two, not three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, but 10, but 11 assassination attempts. That's right, 11 documented times people sought to take her life. Why? Simply because she wanted to be a paradigm shifter. She wanted to be a trailblazer. She knew that it was not only her right, but her responsibility to lead. She knew that she came from a long line of leaders, black women who have been warriors, black women who have been scholars, black women who have been politicians from days old. I'm talking about from the continent of Africa. She knew that she had what it took to be a leader, and she attempted to run for president of these United States, and people wanted to kill her. But that did not stop her. She continued.
Okay.
Ms. Leslie, we can see your screen. I think you are in control of the screen. Say it again. Okay. Sounds good. What do you see on the screen? Okay, I think we have to stop sharing. Let's see. Share. Back to mine. Okay. Ms. Shirley Chisholm, first African-American woman to receive a major party nomination for President of the United States, endured 11 assassination attempts. She had a motto that she was unbought and unbossed. That's right. Unbought and unbossed is what she said about herself. And that's what she was. There is a documentary and a book that's called Unbought and Unbossed. Unlike several other politicians who will go unnamed, she did not waver. She did not bow. She did not succumb to the pressures, succumb to the being sold out, selling out her integrity or selling out her people. Truly, truly a phenomenal sister, Ms. Shirley Chisholm. Some words that come to mind are steadfast, courageous, trailblazer. And like Marcus Garvey, she too was before her time. I am convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that there would be no Barack Obama if there were no Shirley Chisholm. Again, she broke that color line. She began people's minds in the 1970s thinking, wishing, hoping, praying, foreseeing the possibility for a person of color, for a black person to have the highest seat in this country known as the White House. Again, a trailblazer. Right now we're talking in this year of 2020 of a black woman being possibly a vice president or vice president. Again, Shirley Chisholm is who we must honor, who we must respect, who we must think of when we think of potential or when we think of holding the seat in the White House. Next up, we had three women. Now we have three men. Mr. Robert Smalls. Mr. Robert Smalls, perhaps one of the most dynamic, one of the most amazing, one of the most fearless men that you've never heard of. Let me tell you about him. I believe the day was May 2nd, 1863. I'm going to have to verify that, but this brother was on a Confederate ship. Why was he on a Confederate ship? Because he was enslaved. And while on that ship, he worked hard. He had a good reputation. He was liked. And so, unlike other enslaved Africans on this ship in South Carolina, he was given freedom. He wasn't tied up at night like some of the other Africans were. He didn't have the same repute and regard that he had. And so one day he devised a plan that he would set in motion early in the month of May, I believe it was 1863. And what he did was told other enslaved Africans to meet me by the river. He got his family and brother hijacked this prize Confederate ship. Not only did he hijack the ship, he navigated the ship through the waters of the river, and there were Confederate strongholds, Confederate checkpoints. At each of the checkpoints, again, it was nighttime, it was near early dusk. The sun was low, sun was still coming up. He gave the secret Confederate hand signs and the secret Confederate calls, and eventually navigated the ship along the river, picking up other enslaved Africans, and navigated the ship out into the open waters where there was a Union blockade. When he got to the open waters, he saw the firing mechanism. He saw the guns, saw the cannons of the Union ships begin to raise, and they're about to fire upon them because all they knew is that a Confederate ship was coming towards them. So what did he do? Quickly, they say, ran up a white towel, a white shirt, and surrendered the ship to the Union. I mean, did you just hear what I said? This brother devised a plan, used his skills, used his cunningness, if that's the word, was cunning, and devised a plan, told others, rescued his own, put his own life and limb on the line to help others escape. For that, he was paid a handsome sum. Love it didn't stop there. Again, allow me to escape from enslavement. Allow me to get some funds. I am not sure, and you be honest, I'm not sure that you're sure that you would, from that point, continue the efforts to be great for your people. But the brother continued to be great for his people. He went on to become a member of the South Carolina Senate and Congress. That's right. The brother was a senator and Congress, a representative of both on the Senate side and the Congress side in South Carolina. And one of the most, I don't even know what to call it, amazing, pretentious, honorary, outlandish, phenomenal acts. The brother purchased the home that he was formerly enslaved in and lived there for the rest of his days. That's right. The home in which he was a servant. Servant's not a strong enough word. He was enslaved. His dignity, his personhood was robbed from him. From the home that he was at, he purchased that home and lived there for the remaining of his days. Robert Smalls, phenomenal brother. The four words that should go on each side of the base of the monument for Robert Smalls include heroic, clever, diligent, and ambitious. Amazing words that all of our children should seek to manifest. Robert Smalls. Again, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, the seventh monument that should be raised in these United States, in my humble opinion, we have it represented here by the unnamed man, the unnamed African, the unnamed black man. But right before we went on with this production, it occurred to me not only should it be a man, but a man, woman, and child. Just the unnamed. Because we know that there were several unnamed individuals, names whose people whose names did not reach the history books, but they fought during the forced migration from the interior of Africa to the shores. They fought once they were on the shores in those dredges. They fought valiantly on those ships during the transatlantic slave trade. They fought on the plantations. We talked about this before. People who never gave up the struggle for freedom. People who always held the line. There were people who always attempted to live an upright and righteous life, to live a life of dignity. For those people who forever held the line, who never completely bowed or wavered in the struggle for freedom, those unnamed Africans. I believe there should be a statue to the unknown. There's a statue to the unknown soldier in Washington, D.C. So, again, it doesn't go without precedent. Why is it there? Or I propose that there should be a statue to the unnamed black man, woman, and child who lived upright, righteous, moral lives, who attempted at every step of the way to ensure freedom, to ensure that we could live as free, proud, and productive people on these shores and in the Caribbean and in South America. We have a statue to the unnamed Africans. That, people, is my list. Mr. Jamal Brown, a.k.a. Professor Jamal, a.k.a. Mr. Black 365, your host here at the Just Freedom Radio Show, Black History University. That is my list. We're now going to tap in with the host, excuse me, the producer, Ms. Leslie, so she can share with us some of her list. Ms. Leslie, are you there? Let me see if I can unmute you. I'm hitting unmute. Okay, okay. Again, we want you to let us know down in the comment section on Facebook, Continuous Conversation, and elsewhere, well, who do you think is deserving of a list? What do you think about this list? What did you learn that you did not know about these six individuals, and what are your thoughts on having a monument to the unnamed enslaved Africans or freedom fighters? Again, what are your thoughts on the list? What did you learn? Tell us your list. What seven individuals do you think are deserving of a monument of national, of historic, of astronomic proportions? I'm talking like the one in D.C. for Martin Luther King, again, several feet shooting up into the air. Again, every free, proud, and productive people honor their ancestors. Every free, proud, and productive people showcase their greats and honor their greats and memorialize their greats. It's not only our right, but our responsibility that we do the same. What seven people do you think are deserving of a monument? Let us know. Let's continue this conversation. Again, throw off the chains of your mind so that we can have thoughts, have conversations, have imaginations, begin to set seeds into the ground so that we can sow them. Every single invention, every single statue, every single thing that we see manifested in our physical realm began where? In the mind. Began with the thoughts. And so we must begin to think free thoughts. We must begin to think empowering thoughts. We must begin to think thoughts of grandeur so that we can eventually realize them. We now have some visuals from our outstanding host, our outstanding producer, that is, Ms. Leslie. Just the freedom. You now have the floor, Ms. Leslie. Let's hear your list. Yes.
Wall Street took place.
That's right.
Which caused them to destroy them. So laws were put in place so that we would not pool together. So you always hear this notion that black people never stick together. That is a bald-faced lie. They had to create laws to separate us from each other. So one great film that I was able to screen a couple of years ago, almost 5 years ago, with the Pastor Murphyson called the Fair Hope Society, Contradictions of the Fair Hope Society. And it's one of the last societies that still exists. Unfortunately, the young people who celebrate on this sacred ground where former slaves put their money together and established schools and churches, young people go there to celebrate an occasion they call the foot washing ceremony, where they can buy drugs, guns, prostitutes, and so forth. They have no clue of the history of the sacred ground. So Peyton Murphy's documentary, The Contradiction of Fear Hope, speaks to how we as a people have lost our way, not because we don't like each other. I need a better computer's dying now. Not because we don't like each other, but because laws were put into place. Ignorance was something that was created and put into our society. It wasn't that we greed ignorance. It was deliberately done to us to separate us, not from our history of our past of ancient Africa, but from the successes that we had here when we were able to defeat slavery. So those stories and those legacies and how that happened have been deliberately to defeat history. But instead, a new history, a new narrative of what Black life is. So I advise everyone in this area to take a vacation to Philadelphia and do this class in society marker. It is a chosen citizen. Unfortunately, one of the burial sites is now below a neighborhood being gentrified, so you probably will be seeing a Netflix documentary about the Free African Society and Mother Bethel Church in Philadelphia. Burial site to be an unequal playground and a gentrification site. So that's one of my favorites. So I try to combine with my list existing markers that you can take your family to, especially during this pandemic. This is the time to get your kids, your family, your neighbors, your children's friends, and go on these vacations and interweave them as part of your homeschooling.
That's right.
This is a great time. It's an excuse to start homeschools. It's nothing better than the homeschool when you have enthusiastic parents and children. Everybody can learn a little something. All right? So we're still experiencing technical difficulties, audit, engineer, in-house engineering, making sure we don't lose power. Okay. All right. So let's go to the next screen. Here to Mr. Jamal Brown. The next person is Paul Robeson, a New Jersey native. And you can see all of these images that I share on my Facebook almost every night at 8 p.m. And I'm going to keep on clicking so we get a full screen. Click here. Okay. Here is Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson ties into our beloved young man, Kaepernick. He is a gentleman who took a knee on behalf of Black Lives Matter. But we can't go without saying there was another controversy over a football player taking a knee. What was his name? What was his name? The gentleman who took a knee on the football field and caused a whole uproar. He took the knee as a Christian. He started to press the white young man.
Mm-hmm.
And they shipped him off of his team because they do not want you to promote Christianity. And lo and behold, soon after, ask the Google it. Soon after he was booted off his team, I think they sent him to the Jets, a lowly team in New York, a losing team, and he went into obscurity. And then Kaepernick took the knee not to pray, but to pray for the betterment of all Black people who were being murdered. Unarmed Black people out of hands of the police. But before Kaepernick and before the other football player, trying to think of his name, We had Mr. Paul Robeson. Mr. Paul Robeson, he is a gentleman who was the first black valedictorian in the early 1900s at Rutgers University. He spoke 25 languages fluently. He was All-American. He played football at Rutgers. He was a Columbia Law School graduate. He could sing fluently in different languages. And he happened to perform in Scotland. And you might not know this, but Scotland celebrates Black History every month in October. Tim Tebow was the football player who took a knee in prayer and caused an uproar amongst all the demons. And I had to make sure I included the history of people kneeling and putting this proper perspective. But going back to Paul Robeson, he celebrated like many other African Americans in Scotland. Scotland was a place where you had activists for white activists. And when he went to Scotland, he came upon some white activists that told him, "Don't you know our forefathers fought for your His father was an enslaved. And they told him and taught him more about the fight for emancipation on a global level, which many people think of Harriet Tubman when we think about emancipation in America, they think about Abraham Lincoln. But it was far more expansive than those two people are on this side of the earth. We had allies all over the world. And when we could not be educated here, like in the 1750s, Alexander Hamilton sent one of our first black doctors to a school called the African Free School in New York. And this gentleman went on, Mr. McCune Smith, Dr. McCune Smith, could not get his medical license in the United States in the 1700s, so he went to Scotland. You can find his statue or his building in his honor, where he went to school, where he lived, and the school he went to. They have an entire brand new building built in his honor from Dr. McCune. So these are African Americans who have traveled the world in the 1700s fighting for the emancipation of black people, not just here, but abroad as well. So Paul Robeson, unfortunately, he died lonely. He lost most of his money, all because he went all over the world. He did not only have the respect from African Americans, he fought for the rights of working people. And it makes sense because his father was a enslaved man. So if anybody would understand labor disputes, it would be people who were once enslaved. We would be super sensitive when it comes to matters of labor disputes. So we all should be part of the union, should be union members, should be union leaders. And he fought for the unions, and especially how they call May Day. May Day was an international holiday of brotherhood. The fascists since May Day have killed that holiday in the United States. Yeah, how they were celebrating the same day throughout the world. Paul Robeson would go all over the world on May Day and give his speeches. And he would be in a sea of white people as well as black people, all people. So I consider him one of the first Barack Obama. And let's go to the third person. Not my computer, so excuse me.
You are listening to the Gist of Freedom Radio Show. Find out more about what we do here at Black History University. Check in on our past shows. Again, if you enjoy what you're listening to right now, know that we have at this station have been bringing this type of heat, bringing this type of information, educating, uplifting, and encouraging our people to educate and uplift themselves at Black History University. You can find out more about me and some amazing Black History products at black365.com. Again, you are listening to the Gist of Freedom radio show.
Now, Ida B. Wells, I'm trying to use a cheat sheet here, but it's not working out. I don't know why I only have one sentence under her name, but Ida B. Wells, you can chime in on this.
Okay.
She's one of the greatest.
That's right. Attributed her is that a Winchester rifle should hold a place of honor in every Black home.
And what did she say about the rat? She refers to white.
I'm not sure about that one.
You can Google it while I finish up on this. How did you
amazing, amazing sister. I was trying not to leak who is going to be featured in the upcoming Black 365 calendars. However, the time is right and just feels right to let it be known that Ida B. Wells will be honored on the cover of the 12th annual Black 365 calendar that will be coming out here real shortly. Truly, truly a phenomenal sister. As you indicated, she produced what was called the Red Records, where she documented, as you mentioned, the horrific details of lynchings. As you've also highlighted, time and time again, we see that it was men of good repute. It was men who had entrepreneurial spirits who were lynched under false pretenses. She came to California, in fact, came all the way west, and was in the Bay Area, Northern California, looking to start life there. Absolutely hated it. Felt disconnected from her people. Was homesick and wanted to make her way back east, and had no funds to do so. So she looked upon the landscape. The only man that she could think of who had enough funds and be willing to loan her some money so she can get back to the South and continue her work was Mr. Robert Church. And Mr. Robert Church gave her some funds, $200, if I'm not mistaken, to make it back to I believe, to Tennessee for her to continue some of her work. And she was critical of Robert Church in her writings, and she let him know that once she returns, thank you very much for the loan. However, I will continue to tell the truth about you and the other brothers who aren't, you know, living up to the standards I think that she's living up to. So, again, she was short in stature, but truly she was a giant. You went deep with that one. You went deep. Okay. That's right. He played for the Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah, I follow that. I follow that story quite closely.
He is still. He's
wow. They have
produced
I'm letting you know right now, I want to hitch a ride with you to that next family reunion so that we can do some live interviews and get some perspectives and get some untold stories from the Steele family. I know that there's a wealth, a plethora, an abundance of stories that they have that they can tell us. And I look forward to meeting some of the family and just being a part, touching or being close to some of that great history from the Steele family. Again, you're hearing some insights that you won't hear anywhere else other than here on the Gist of Freedom radio show. We're hearing, for me at least, it's rare that, you know, she comes from behind the mic and lends her voice and lends her knowledge, history, and expertise. And so I'm here soaking it all up. You're hearing from the voice of our show's producer, Ms. Leslie Gist of Freedom. I am your host as well, co-host tonight, Jamal Brown, Black365.com, where you can find out more about me. Looks like she has her final individual that she's going to showcase tonight who deserves a statue here in these United States.
So wrong. Totally wrong. He was way
sustainable technology.
Training unless first know how to do something, know how to apply it. Having the academics and not being able to apply it, sometimes even in sports, a player can play one position in high school and that will come up in college or in pros say, I know you were a quarterback in high school and college, but really want to make the big bucks, which is your position. Same thing with college. Major in one area, want to get paid, have to. Julius Rosenwald, who was the CEO of Kids and Robots, went to his church, what they call a temple, he's a Jewish man, and he had a very religious conversation with his leader. And his leader told him, if you really want to know the truth, you need to read Booker T. Washington's book, Up From Sleep. He read that book, it changed his whole world, his perspective. And he had to go meet Booker T. Washington, just like wanted to meet Julius Rosenwald, a very rich man, humbly went to this Booker T. Washington's campus. Said, "Let me see what you. How did you do this? You trained from shackles. You could still see the shackles on your ankles and your arms and wrists. How did you build such a campus? So I want to help you." What did he do? He offered to help Booker T build 5,000 schools in less than 20 years areas where there weren't any schools. Now, the scheme was he wanted to drop schools in these locations. Just drop them, already prefabbed. And Brooklyn said, no, we have to build it together. My people build these houses, build these schools. You match the funds, we'll raise it, we'll build it. So these schools are called Rosenwald Schools. They're now very popular. You'll probably see a film about that on Netflix as well. There is a film about Rosenwald and Booker T. Washington, a documentary. Can't remember it, the name of it, but it's out there. It's mainly featuring Rosenwald. It was produced and written by a woman of Jewish faith. And it's an excellent film, and it talks about the graduates from the Rosenwald Schools, which include Maya Angelou. It's a who's who of black people that came out of these Rosenwald Schools. So those are my top
I love it.
I can give you top five for the next 3 weeks.
You and me both.
So those are my top five. I saved the worst for last as far as letting you go on first, and I will come on in so that I won't disrupt your lead, your followers.
Appreciate you.
So let me jump in at the end.
You are welcome. And let's see if I can share my screen back one more time. Before we wrap up, I have something pretty cool to show you. Let's see. We don't want to share. We just want to look at me. Let's see. We want to end the sharing. I don't know how to do it. We're going to get this all squared away sooner than later. I know. No, I just wanted to show you this here. I know you can see it. I'm not sure if those in the recording audience will see it, but this is a first edition. This book sits atop my library. It doesn't sit in the mix of other ones. It's a first edition Up From Slavery book, one of my most prized possessions right here, autobiography of Booker T. Washington. And this is a book. I'm not sure if you are familiar with this. I would like our listening audience to perhaps take a look at this, a book called Death in 60 Days, Who Silenced Booker T. Washington, A Nurse's View, where this sister who has is currently a nurse, goes through the last days of Booker T. Washington, checks out his medical records, and she is of the belief that he was indeed poisoned. She uncovers and showcases some quite compelling evidence that our great leader, one of our most practical leaders, the Honorable Booker T. Washington, was silenced purposefully and was murdered. So add that book to your library. And I think
why would they murder?
Because he was so innovative, so and creative, so on top of things, and electrifying and magnifying and exciting the black masses in a way that no other person had. And they were, thinking that he was getting too big, just the same way they silence, many of our leaders when they feel as if they are becoming too big and are disrupting the plans that they have for their culture. That's the opinions, and she mixes in some facts and things. And it, again, is a book that I personally read this summer since we've been in COVID, lockdown and what have you. And quite interesting. Yeah, all right, interesting book.
Yeah, could you, I'm going to mute myself.
Can you recap your topic? And we'll be wrapping up here. Yeah, I can do that real fast before we wrap up. Again, this is Jamal Brown, host here of the Just Freedom Radio Show, and you are listening to the tail end of another exciting show. Thank you for sticking with us. It was rather long, but hopefully it was strong and captivating for you. We heard from Ms. Leslie Gist, just a Freedom Radio. I wrote down her list. She said her list includes Richard Allen, Paul Ropes, and Ida B. Wells, William Steele. And I think she's doing an honorable mention there, Mr. David Ruggles, who should be celebrated more. My list included, and also Booker T. Washington, my list says that we should be honoring with a statue the great one, Moses of our people, Harriet Tubman, Malcolm X, Madam C.J. Walker, the right, excellent, honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, Shirley Chisholm, great leader, unbossed. I've strayed away from using this term because it's not a good term, but it's a term colloquially used by the youth. This brother was gangster. Okay, I said it. He was gangster. He, what I mean by that, he just lived by his own terms, defined himself for himself, did some bold, bold things. Mr. Robert Smalls, again, escaped from enslavement, was a member of South Carolina Senate and Congress, purchased the home that he was formerly enslaved in. Heroic, clever, diligent, ambitious are the words we use for him. And I believe that we should have a statue to unnamed black men, women, and children who lived, struggled, and died to allow us to be who we are and what we are today. Once again, I am so honored and so humbled by the fact that those of you who are listening to this stuck in there with us on this another amazing show. You heard from myself, Jamal Brown. You heard from our producer, Ms. Leslie. Just a Freedom Radio show, the only place where you can find hard-hitting, straight to the chase, no chaser, black history facts every single episode. Tell a friend to tell a friend to join us on the next episode. We're going to say goodnight to you all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Just a Freedom Radio Show.